Good evening and welcome, everyone. It's so good to see all of your beloved faces on the screen and to welcome you here tonight. So we come from near and far, bearing our gifts, our longings in this year of unknowing. Yet we know that there is light, there is choice, there are laws of the universes, and there are possibilities for our arising. In lighting the Christ candle, we call upon the conscious circle of humanity to gather with us and to inform us. So we begin in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, God transcendent, God omnipresent, and God immanent, the Holy Living Trinity. Amen. And tonight we begin our evening in the remembrance and celebration of one of the teachers who has personally been very close to us, and that is Thomas Keating, who was born on March 7th, 1923. His birthday is in the next week, and we celebrate his 101st birthday. What a gift he was to the world and to us in particular. So many of us have been deeply affected by this being. He visited the church many times over a 20-year period. He is the beloved author of over 30 books and many videos. The following passage that I'm going to read that he wrote is taken from his book, From the Mind to the Heart. It seems to speak directly to us. The world desperately needs people free of cultural illusions and who are undertaking a dedicated exploration of true reality, not just to know the material nature of things, but also to know the very source of everything that exists. An unfolding contemplative practice eventually becomes total receptivity. And in that receptivity, one is aware of a silence that is becoming an irresistible attraction. Silence leads to stillness. Stillness leads to surrender, beginning to be filled with a presence. And this presence, once established in our innermost being, might be called spaciousness. There is nothing in it except a certain vibrancy and aliveness. You are awake to something you cannot describe, and which is absolutely marvelous, totally generous, and which manifests itself with increasing tenderness, sweetness, and intimacy. The divine presence is inescapable. It fills every creative thing down to the smallest particle, every subatomic particle. So we are just a bunch of particles walking around that have been put together in a certain order of energies that are invisible and unknown to us. And so it is. Happy birthday, Father Thomas. We love you and are with you in eternity. So now we prepare ourselves, knowing that what each of us brings matters. How we come matters. How we participate matters. And so we place ourselves here now, with intention and imminent trust and receptivity to the influences coming from the conscious circle of humanity. And we prepare to receive them without effort, rather with receptivity, with back upright, heart open, mind quiet, in directed attention, body relaxed, noticing and then letting go of all tension, constriction, resistance, open. And we breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that brought heaviness, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy, surprise, all affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it, ask that it all be transubstantiated in our being as food, as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over all complexities. I hand over all plans. I hand over all anxieties and small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. Now we share in a time of Lectio Divina. And we take in our passage three times. What was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked upon and touched with our hands, concerns the word of life. For the life was made visible. We have seen it and testify to it and proclaim to you the eternal life that was with the Father and was made visible to us. What we have seen and heard, we proclaim now to you. This power of seeing does not dismiss what is undesirable, nor turn away and settle on the agreeable. We learn to see everything without refusing the details, with an attention that is pure and sufficiently intense not to be diverted by subjective reactions. To do so, we return to the root of perception. And in this movement, attention purifies itself and little by little eliminates the elements foreign to a direct perception. Only the impression of reality remains. We can know today of another nature in ourselves, coming from another world through the higher centers. It resonates in the form of a fine vibration to which we can try to attune all parts of oneself. This calls for a quality of attention that will allow it to go towards this vibration and sustain a contact with it. This energy is of a very special kind, an intense energy that is active enough to remain alive in front of our thoughts and feelings and does not go down or be influenced by anything. We can become one in the union with the infinite, in the reduction of our soul to its simplest self. Its divine essence is realized. And having found our inmost self, we find the divine indwelling that is within all. What was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked upon and touched with our hands, concerns the word of life. For the life was made visible, we have seen it and testified to it and proclaimed to you the eternal life that was with the Father and was made visible to us. What we have seen and heard, we proclaim now to you. This power of seeing does not dismiss what is undesirable, nor turn away and settle on the agreeable. We learn to see everything without refusing the details, with an attention that is pure and sufficiently intense, not to be diverted by subjective reactions. To do so, we return to the root of perception. In this movement, attention purifies itself and little by little eliminates the elements foreign to a direct perception. Only the impression of reality remains. We can know today of another nature in ourselves, coming from another world through the higher centers. It resonates in the form of a fine vibration, to which we can try to attune all parts of our oneself. This calls for a quality of attention that will allow it to go towards this vibration and sustain a contact with it. This energy is of a very special kind, an intense energy that is active enough to remain alive in front of our thoughts and feelings and does not go down or be influenced by anything. We can become one in a union with the infinite, in the reduction of our soul to its simplest nature, its divine essence is realized. And having found our inmost self, we find the divine dwelling that is within all. What was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked upon and touched with our hands, concerns the word of life. For the life was made visible, we have seen it and testify to it, and proclaim to you the eternal life that was with the Father and was made visible to us. What we have seen and heard, we proclaim now to you. This power of seeing does not dismiss what is undesirable, nor turn away and settle on the agreeable. We learn to see everything without refusing the details, with an attention that is pure and sufficiently intense not to be diverted by subjective reactions. To do so, we return to the root of perception. In this movement, attention purifies itself and little by little eliminates the elements foreign to a direct perception. Only the impression of reality remains. We can know today of another nature in ourselves, coming from another world through the higher centers. It resonates in the form of a fine vibration to which we can try to attune all parts of ourself, oneself. This calls for a quality of attention that will allow it to go towards this vibration and sustain a contact with it. This energy is of a very special kind, and intense energy that is active enough to remain alive in front of our thoughts and feelings, and does not go down or be influenced by anything. We can become one in a union with the infinite, and in the reduction of our soul to its simplest self, its divine essence is realized. In having found our inmost self, we find the divine dwelling that is within all. And so it is. So we stop our sharing now and invite your sharing, and we'll begin with Jack and Jacqueline. Jackie.
Good morning. Good morning. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Jackie.
I will be honest and say there were way too many words in there, but what captured me was the image. And it is when I wake up at 5 in the morning, when we wake up at 5 in the morning, and the conditions are such that I can walk outside under the stars by myself. I for the first time for the day, know where I am in scale, where I am in the universe. And it's, for me, the ultimate way to start the day in a centered place. It doesn't look like that sparkly image exactly, because it still is Austin and we're not that dark, but it's enough for me. And so the words that I took from this passage that spoke to me in that way was that only the impression of reality remains. This energy of a very special kind, an intense energy that does not go down. We find the divine indwelling that is within all. That is where I am when I finish that journey around my neighborhood and come back into my home and begin my practice. And if I don't start my day that way, it never is as spectacular and centered as it would be otherwise. So thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you for that witness to us. Michael, I assume it's not Pamela.
Correct.
It is thou.
Yeah. The reading reminded me of one of my favorite books, which was Anthony DeMello's Awareness. And that first paragraph for me was all about awareness. It's wanting me to confirm my speaking language as Spanish. I don't know what, I've never seen Zoom do this. Okay. You're muted now, Marianne, but okay.
Yes, I
Anyway,
hear you in English.
in English. Okay, thanks. Sorry about that. Right, so the first paragraph reminded me of Anthony DiBello's book, Awareness, and about taking us to or inviting us to a place of simple awareness without the overlay of meaning and story and association, simply a presence to what is. And I think that the work tries to give us a tool for this. The whole conversation about second conscious shock is about taking things in a new way. But I think that this awareness is beyond that. It is really taking things, in a sense, in no way. It's taking things simply as they are. And then linking that to the last paragraph of the reading, that this opens us to the divine indwelling, or it opens us to the divine nature of all things, which is completely hidden and masked when I am taking things through my lens of story and meaning and overlay. Then it's not God's reality about whatever the thing is that I'm perceiving. It's my story. It's my reality about that. So that's all.
Thank you, Michael. Well done in English the whole time.
Gracias.
Thank you. Pam, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. I, like Jackie, was struck by the image and just in a visceral way. Mm-hmm. And if I were an artist, that's exactly the way I would depict my experience of really of self-remembering, because I've talked about it in the past as an effervescent energy that seems to just fill my being. And that's what I saw in that image, and the words that it resonates as a fine vibration really depicts, I think, what's in that image. It also struck me that what you read from Father Thomas tonight could have been a caption for that image.
Yeah.
So it just all is, it's all woven together for me in a very beautiful way.
Yes, it is.
Thank
you, Pam. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
Good evening, Steve. Welcome.
Welcome, everyone. You know, Gurdjieff sort of described conscience as experiencing everything all at once. It's just having this knowledge of the truth that goes through everything all at once. And last night, had a friend over with his son and another friend. And this friend of mine is got a rapidly deteriorating ALS. So he's getting to the point where he's going to need a tracheostomy and all that. And he's in a wheelchair. And sitting with that, sitting with him, and we had normal conversations. His son was talking about his experience in the Navy, and I could see him looking at his son like he's his legacy, knowing his limited lifespan, and just, but then experiencing the mundane, yet experiencing the fragileness of life and the limits of life, but then seeing something in him that is his eternal nature, and then being able to feel that all at once, it is something that's outside your own body. And I'm having trouble shaking the feeling today. So that's what I have to share.
Yeah. Thank you for that gift, Steve. Thank you. And it says Moses, but I think it's Catherine. Good evening and welcome.
Yes, I really liked the picture. It reminded me of, well, I have this imagination that that's what heaven would be like, that everyone would look like white light like that. And just walking across the bridge, I was thinking, you know, this long journey that we've been on here on planet Earth. And so I just had this imagination like of that being heaven, and maybe that was what it might kind of look like. And then all the other white beings coming into your, and you could see everyone you know and don't know, or and they're all white lights like that.
And maybe they are. Maybe they are. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you. Anyone else like to share? Well, we'll turn from Lectio Divina to another portion of our evening into the journey of being, and we welcome Donald Janung, who will accompany us on this journey. Good evening, Donald. Welcome.
Good evening, friends. As we continue on our journey of being, and tonight we segment in from essence to being. And so before we get moving into that, I'd like you to take a moment and just look back into your personal experience, into your time body of when you first met the work and where your being experience was then and where it is now. What is it like if you had a photograph of yourself then? And even if it was started last year for some of us, or maybe it started 5 years ago, what was the experience then and now? If you saw that person from 5 years ago or 1 year ago or 6 months ago, this is the journey of being. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we'll start with tying in a little bit closer to our exercises, our practices from last week. One was reading the commentary in the fifth volume on Essence and the Return Journey. And the second was to look at Father Thomas Keating's video again and begin to talk about the experience and embody the experience that Father Thomas gave us. And so I've outlined here the levels of awareness that Father Thomas gave us in that brief 8-minute potent video, so that we could begin to reflect a little bit on our essence and our journey into being. So I invite you to share what has come up for you with this practice from the last 2 weeks of looking at this video and also reading the commentary, and what may have jumped out for you as a practice in the commentary or something to ponder. I'll leave this up on the screen for just a few moments until we begin our conversations. Where do you find yourself in these levels of awareness? What is the movement from different levels? Good evening, Howard, and thank you for starting us off. Did Howard go away? I see Karen's hand up. Yes, Karen.
There we go. Well, as I recall, my everyday consciousness was the loudest of my voices in my head. I tend to be a head person anyway. So I started off being very suspicious of what all you guys were talking about and all that kind of thing. And my emotional reaction was, I seemed to be attracted to what you were offering. I may not have understood it, but there was something about it that was very attractive. Let's see, dominating character. So I was suspicious, judgmental, curious, and thinking you guys were just a little bit too much on the serious side. And so as I've learned through the practices as much as I can and showing up, I moved into deciding that I loved the freedom that what you were presenting offered. It was a kind of freedom that I intuitively knew I always wanted, but didn't know how to get, because I was still trying to get it through my old personality of living. Doesn't work. It says image of God and God's idea of who we are in our uniqueness. I still work on that. That's still a large area and one I wish to and aim to expand on. And I find that through my self-observation and self-observation of my ready and able criticalness of myself and others, I can say I've come quite a long ways in losing that personality trait, thank goodness. But it's still there. It still reminds me that I can be judgmental. I can go there. But I've also known the other side. And I call her helping auntie. So when I have thoughts that are not pleasant, I hand it over to helping auntie and she disposes it for me. It's a visual that I can get at my level right now and it works just fine. And when I have another one, I'll let you know. That's what happened to me.
Thank you, Karen. The idea of each of us accepting who we are, the uniqueness, the unique expression of each of us in the way that we've been formed is indeed a very challenging part of the spiritual journey. I appreciate where Father Thomas puts the humility component in with that. It's so important. Thank you for leading us off and sharing, Karen. It's good to be with you on the journey. Brother Howard.
And I am here. I just couldn't get it unmuted last time. But the that's a video by Father Keating I had never seen before. And I spoke about it last week because it, you know, even though it wasn't to do with the previous week's homework, just because it seemed to speak to me so much, it kind of, you know, I know Father Keating and Bernadette Roberts, you know, didn't always see eye to eye, I guess, but it seemed like it reminded me quite a bit of Bernadette's Circle tour, but in an opposite way. And it just kind of linked different things together for me and being able to see, okay, and just like Karen was saying, yeah, when am I not an ordinary personality? I mean, it's pretty frequent. That's where the eyes like to reside. But I could also see each level. I drew the little circles like he did on it and a drawing so that it would remind me. And to get to that middle point, you know, the divine indwelling is really I guess what speaks to me the most and where I can be, I have been at before. And so I know that it's there, it's true, it's possible. And so yeah. I just love that video. I mean, I hard telling how many Father Keating videos I've seen and how many times I've seen some of them, you know, but it was just, gosh, like a godsend for me. So,
yeah. Howard, as you were talking, I was kind of reflecting back with where we started and all this together, and you were bringing your little buddy Josh along and spending all the time at the church, and your being then and your being now. What a difference. What a journey.
I was thinking that when you were talking about it, and yes, I mean, there's like, oh gosh, yeah, the journey has been incredible.
Yeah, incredible. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, Donald.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, Donald. I'd like to tie in your first observation of when I first came into the work and where I am now with that list. So beginning the spiritual awareness, I can't have a, for one second, I can't remember not having a spiritual awareness from the time in the crib until this. There was just a reality. There's spirit. This is spirit. As far as when I first came into the work, ordinary awareness occurred at when the church was, Jackie dragged me into the church kicking and screaming. And I had studied up on centering prayer and I'd studied up on Gurdjieff just to let her know she doesn't know what she's talking about. And in that first Sunday, Tim was preaching on some Buddhist principles, and we're walking out. And I say, Jackie, is this a Christian church? He says, I think so. Then I went into the bookstore and Alicia was running the bookstore. And I tried to present an argument to her and she wouldn't have anything to do with it. She said, why don't you just buy some books? Which we did. So that was ordinary awareness. That was my personality. I'm telling you, I am where I am today because in essence had so much damn personality to eat and consume. That where I find myself, I find the awareness within me, all up and down from ordinary to the very highest level. And it's like the, you know, it's like a roller coaster at times. Like when I tried to open the salt and salt went everywhere and I said some choice words. But wrapping it up, yes, where I am now, where this one is, where the spirit, the whole, all of me is in a different place and a much higher, finer, and gentler, more loving place.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, indeed, Jack. Thank you. And again, as you were speaking, I was recalling the year that we were work partners. And that was a very meaningful year.
Yes.
In my spiritual journey. That was a very meaningful year.
And so it was for me. It was your brother. It was Michael Begerman and you. And I said, Tim, do I need a lot of work? He goes, oh, yeah.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate your being. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Donald.
Good to see you smiling too, Brad.
Thank you. I'm going to share this. I shared this with my journey group, so some of them are people out there are going to hear this a second time tonight. But the Father Keating video was I've seen it before, and you know, one of those things where you see it over and over again, you just learn something new every time. And decades ago, when I started at CCH, I was at the Ordinary Awareness and completely motivated by my emotional center, consumed by my emotional center. And today, I really want to believe I'm like at the true self most of the time, if I'm really self-observing and being aware of my surroundings. But when I go on retreat, or if I do something artistic and get into the flow, I really want to believe I'm at the divine indwelling, and touching God is just amazing. So thank you for letting me share.
Yeah, Brad, thank you for sharing that. You know, sometimes we have a tendency to hold back in celebrating just where we truly are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's an odd part of our culture that we break in this church community. And I see that we're continuing to mature in that way, that we can celebrate and speak outwardly about where we are experiencing our Christness in the spiritual journey. So I celebrate that with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hello, Carly.
Hi, good evening, Donald. So what has been coming to meet me in that video and just my work the past couple of weeks has been around money. And January and February are often really challenging times. My husband and I are both self-employed. And this year has been fulfilled its promise. And this is an area that, oh my gosh, if you'd asked me like the thing that I want to practice with the least, it's that, because it really scares me. And it touches so many survival fears. And so kind of what's been coming up for me is the shift in attitude towards it. Like, okay, if this is what's going to be here, this is my opportunity. And there will be some day in the future, perhaps, where this is not my experience. And I don't want to look back and think, well, I wish I hadn't taken the opportunity to really be with that experience then, as uncomfortable as it is. So it's been down to the wire several times where it's like, okay, do we have enough money for this day? Okay, we do. Not sure about tomorrow yet, but being in that place where you have to just hold so close to that, to me, it's like just tucked under the wing of God. Like, okay, I have to hold really, really close, because there isn't an outstretched guarantee for weeks or months. And it's just been this really transformative experience of bringing us closer together as a couple, where how do we support each other? Because, you know, the emotions go all over the place. You know, yesterday I was so alarmed, I just had to take the dog for a walk because I couldn't function, you know. But I can feel all those levels are there. They're all there. So for me, what I yearn to do is pray and ask to be shown. And that's where the practice, my daily aim is pretty much ask for help has been, you know, ask for help and listen and wait and listen and wait. And so it's turned out to be, it's not a comfortable experience, but it is also a really beautiful one. And Patrick sent me an email today where he's like, we're in the crucible. Yeah, and I can feel that. So it's okay if we're in the crucible, we're in the crucible. And right. Who knows what might come to meet us there. Yeah. So thank you.
Carly, thank you. I so much appreciate the honesty, and also I value the anchoring the observation outside of ourselves in order to get more distance from it, in recognizing the I for what it is. And it's not I, but yet, you know, there's an acceptance of what is at hand.
Yeah,
and it's so beautiful how this is being digested within your spiritual journey. Beautiful.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Surprising, very surprising.
Yeah, I can feel the intentional suffering and the freedom that's coming with that. Bless you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Good evening, Melba.
Hello. I'm thrilled to talk about the evolution, the transformation, the awe that I've experienced for a year. Mm-hmm. And I feel when Marianne was reading about Dr. Father Keaton's description of essence, and she, you know, read that part where he's talked about spaciousness. It just hearing that, I've had forgotten it, but just hearing it again, I had to like relish in that is the word that I would now use to describe the spaciousness that I've experienced in the school, the group, the movements, seva, the service, the people, the like you especially, the classes that I took last year were incredible. And so I feel like for me, it's like Jack said, you know, you get you're in all of those awarenesses, but I feel like I am moving through these levels, gliding or flying or soaring. It's not you know, like steps. I'm aware of it, but I also feel the community has that movement, and that's why I think, you know, I have experienced like an internal spaciousness by just practicing the work and being present with my community. Marianne mentioned something about us ministering to one another, and I have never seen that purity in ministering on the level that I experience at, you know, our church. It's such a spacious love. It's such a spacious understanding and tenderness and intimate. And I feel like I thought I knew the word commitment and devotion, but it's expanded. It has expanded like beyond my wildest dreams. And so I've been learning a lot. I thought mainly I've been learning that I thought I knew a lot of stuff, but I don't. I mean, I knew a certain level of it, but things have deepened and, you know, expanded to the point that I'm open to being a new student.
Yeah.
Of life.
Beautiful. It's been so fun to be on the journey with you. How was it? Just been 2 years for you here?
1 year.
1 year.
Because wow. I visited the church in May of 2022. But I mean, what I have to say too is, you know, when you get to be my age, not that many things excite you. You've already read the book, bought the t-shirt, you know, you gone to the concert, you know. And it's fascinating to me that here we are, even in the second year, and I'm still excited and fascinated and getting to know people. It's not like half of the people, I don't even know their names, but I know their energy and their beauty. I feel them, and that is very nourishing to me.
Yeah,
I hadn't felt that before on that level. Yeah. You know, anyway,
that's thank beautiful. You. Thank you. Thank you, Melba. You know, I hope that joy, that excitement, that newness always stays with you. I remember a brief walk with Tim on a particular day, and he asked me about how the class went, the Thursday night class went in the sanctuary, his introduction to the work class. And And I said, it was so enjoyable seeing how alive and in the moment everyone was in the work. And he said, oh, that's wonderful. And he said, well, you know, they'll fall asleep around the work just like you have.
Oh.
And we just kept right on walking. And you know, I kind of look over and he looks over me with that grin that only Tim has. And, you know, his point was really well placed, you know, that I was feeling a joy in them that I wasn't feeling in myself. And so that was really good food for me. It was an honest moment. And so I truly mean, I hope this joy stays with you always. Yeah, it's
I mean, it is
wonderful.
It's given me a richer life for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Melba.
Common language, the shared language, because that grounds us.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Cammie.
Hi, Donald.
Hello, friend.
I was not going to participate sharing tonight, just having a long day. And boy, you've woken my spirit up. I started out tired. And I am so grateful for your question because you were my introduction to Church of Conscious Harmony when I took the Lessons in Truth class with you. And that met me at a particularly difficult time in my spiritual journey. And seeing the phase, the steps of awareness and growth, spiritual growth, I felt at the time that I was leaving my Catholic roots because of certain things that had happened. And over the course of 2 years with the Church of Conscious Harmony, I've been able to reconcile and say, still with conviction, I am Catholic. And I am still Catholic. And I look at those spiritual steps, and so much of that was formed in me from that formation in my Catholicism. And the church's devotion to not being binary and being unitive and allowing freedom and experimentation, and all of that has allowed me to hold a much bigger container and not feeling like I have to leave something, but that I can incorporate, and I can incorporate my formation and evolve in the ways that the church has designed for us to evolve in our spiritual maturity. And I'm very grateful.
Yeah, thank you. I know exactly the sentiment you're speaking about. I was reflecting on that some time ago, and I felt like my Catholic upbringing for me was putting parts together of a puzzle, but I never had the perimeter. And then I came across the church and the work teaching and the contemplative dimension, and it was like now I could begin to put the pieces again to form the perimeter and make the, you know, the center parts begin to make connection with the exterior. So I know exactly what you're saying with that. Yeah.
Well, and your metaphor, I hear that. And for me, it's always been, I felt like my Catholicism was, you know, we think of the people say, think outside the box. And I joke and I say, my box was not just a drawn pencil thin box. Mine was the 6 foot thick walls of a cathedral, you know, mm-hmm. The box kept me safe and it gave me good formation and it pointed to some very important things. And then I needed to get out of the box, but boy, chipping through 6 feet has been some work, but the Church of Conscious Harmony has made that work delight. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. We're hermeticists. You know, we're bringing in all these different ideas and different traditions and integrating them together into the oneness. Thank you, Cammie. It's good to be on the journey with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Gay, we'll finish our sharing with you. Roland, I hope we can come back later after we talk a little bit more about being. Hold on there, buddy. Hello, Gay. Yeah, we can't hear you quite yet, and we want to hear every word you're saying.
Okay. It's interesting to me that I never know at any given moment where I am, what state I'm in. It's only by looking back. It's only by looking back to see the changes in myself. So I don't know where I am right now, you know, and I don't know how much wider, how much deeper this thing might evolve in me. I will say that when my husband Lewis and I walked in the door of the church, which was quite a long time ago, I was pretty lost at the time. I didn't even know how lost I was and how much I was yearning for something. And when I walked in it, heard Tim talk, and it was more than him talking, it was the whole energy in the place. I knew immediately that this is what I had been searching for, longing for my whole life, and I didn't even know it. So I can't even express the gratitude I feel for the teachings and the teacher and the community. And I have loved giving back. I've loved doing service of, you know, every kind I can think of. But one thing I remember is at that point in time in my life, I got the idea right off the bat that this was something that I could accomplish if I worked hard. And now looking back, I don't know how it happened, and it certainly was not me. So I'm grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Gay. I always appreciate your clarity and your descriptions. It just feels so real and genuine, your journey is. So thank you for the way you're able to describe your experiences. It's very helpful.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's take off now with a little bit more on the being journey. So start with the question then, what is being? And we don't need to get into this too deeply, but there are some distinctions that's good for us to kind of get a little bit of clarity around. And the work teaches that being is a thing and what it is from its origin, but its existence is from its birth. And conception takes place before birth. So animals have an existence from birth, for example. A horse, a dog, a cow, they all exist. They have a common existence. But the being of a horse, a dog, and a cow are quite different and are not from birth, but from their conception. Now, man's a little bit different from the other life forms because man, from the work's point of view, is capable of self-development. Man's born as a self-developing organism and so is incomplete and at a lower level of being than he's destined to by his creation. Are all mankind the same in being? And again, from the standpoint of the work, it says that the man is not taken as one and the same, that people are not one and the same in regard to their being. And so it divides being into seven categories based on center of gravity. So let's take a moment. What would those seven categories be? Well, it starts out with the first one is man number one, instinctive moving man. Man number two would be the emotional life. The third category is based on the intellectual life. The four would be the one that's distributed among the first three. And we would come to know that as balanced man. And then man five, six, and seven of those categories are part of the conscious circle of humanity. And that's people who have undergone different degrees of transformation or rebirth or development. Now, in the work, there's a question that's not merely of what you know, but what you are. And what you know belongs to the side of knowledge, but what you are belongs to the side of being. So knowledge taught in the work must gradually become my knowledge. And that's why we work on the side of knowledge first, studying the work, studying the system. And this takes time and effort. Then this knowledge must be put to practice and applied to my life, my being. So we've got this cute little character here with a horse in each hand. A parallel development, though, has to happen between knowledge and being. This is necessary. If one gets too far ahead of the other, development goes wrong, and sooner or later, it must come to a standstill. So this is kind of where we have to hold our horses a little bit, because there's some of us that may be a little bit more interested in loading up too far on the knowledge of the system and not applying it to our being. And there may be some of us that are very interested in the being part of it, but aren't really so interested in the part that includes work on the side of knowledge. So I'm going to read just a little bit right now from In Search of the Miraculous, where Ouspensky lays out a very clear case of why it is so important to be balanced with knowledge in being. So this is from page 65 of In Search of the Miraculous, just a couple of paragraphs. He says, people understand what knowledge means, and they understand the possibility of different levels of knowledge. They understand that knowledge may be lesser or greater, that is to say, of one quality or of another. But what we do not understand is this in relation to being. Being for us simply means existence, to which is opposed to non-existence. But we do not understand that being or existence may be of very different levels and categories. And he said, gives a different example here of, take for example, the being of a mineral and a plant. It's a different being. The being of a plant and an animal is again a different being. And the being of an animal and of a man is a different being. But the being of two people can differ from one to another more than the being of a mineral and of an animal. And that's exactly what people don't understand. They don't understand that knowledge depends on being. And not only do they not understand this latter, but they definitely do not wish to understand it, especially in the Western culture, where it's considered that a man may possess great knowledge. For example, he may be an able scientist, make discoveries, advance science. And at the same time, he may be, and has the right to be, petty, egotistic, mean, envious, vain, naive. And all of that seems very well acceptable. Yet it is his being. And people think that this knowledge does not depend on his being. And people of Western culture put great value on the level of a man's knowledge, but they do not value the level of a man's being and are not ashamed of the low level of our own being. They do not even understand what it means. And they do not understand that a man's knowledge depends on his level of being. And if knowledge gets too far ahead of being, it becomes theoretical. abstract, and not applicable to life, or actually harmful. Because instead of serving life and helping people, the better to struggle with the difficulties they meet, it begins to complicate man's life and brings new difficulties into it, new troubles and calamities that weren't there before. So it says the reason for this is that knowledge, which is not in accordance with being, cannot be large enough for or sufficiently suited to man's real need. It'll always be the knowledge of one thing together with the ignorance of another. A knowledge of the detail without a knowledge of the whole. A knowledge of the form without knowledge of the essence. So in this way, Ouspensky is pointing out the importance of studying this system. And he's talking about, when he says a system, the complete system, both sides of the system. And that is the psychology of our evolution and the cosmology of our evolution. So we recall that one of the aims, primary aim of the work, is purification of the emotional center. And here's a brief diagram, a different look of a diagram of the three-story house or the three-story factories set in other places. And we have this emotional center here. And the emotional center is the one that needs a purification so that the influence of the higher emotional center can then feed it. And this fits right into what Father Thomas was talking about on his most inner layers of awareness. So when we start talking about the purification of the emotional center, we have to realize that all is involved with that. So when we look at the emotional center, we can see here some of the affirming parts in this upper half of the emotional center, and just a reminder of the negative parts that are on the lower side of it. And in the outer or the moving part, we have some of the eyes that tend to reside in those particular areas. So we've got irritation, impatience, small worries, feeling disappointed, boredom, embarrassment, etc. Moving center, outer part, eyes that need purification, that have energy in it that we need for our spiritual transformation. So when we do our three-step work of self-observation, observing these eyes of embarrassment and recognizing the thoughts, the feelings, the sensation that's involved in embarrassment, and realizing that there's an energy in there and that that's just an eye that's consuming my life force. And when we begin to separate from it through self-observation and practicing non-identification, now there's a free flow of energy that's available for us to begin to practice self-remembering. That is to say, remembering who we truly are. And that again gets to those inner levels of awareness, as Father Keating was talking about. And then we get to the middle parts, where there's a different level of attention. The attention in the middle part of the center is qualitized or described as an attracted attention. When you get into resentment or self-pity or apathy or suspicion, we get into that place, it's a little bit easier to move out of it, because if something else comes in and distracts us under some of these particular types of eyes, we can move away from them still with some ease. That is to say, if a lobster tail and a cup of hot butter comes across my awareness, you know, all of a sudden apathy goes away because it's been distracted. And then we have the inner parts, hatred, jealousy, malice. Those where the attention, the flavor, the characteristic of attention is very much a focused attention. And it takes a great deal of work and sometimes time to move away from those particular eyes that have so much of our life force in them. So work on being in regards to the emotional center. It demands, among other things, that we make efforts to observe and to realize the existence of these emotions in ourselves. We notice their origins and the course that they take. That is to say, how they begin to move through us, and then how they begin to get out into the world through us if we aren't properly insulated using the work, and the effects that they're giving rise to in the world and also in our body. So purification of the emotional center is a big part of our movement in being. Now, this particular idea of one's being attracts one's life is really an important one to spend a moment on. Your being attracts your life. There's a connection with what is out and what is inner. And you begin to see the good of living and doing the work. Your being begins to change. And this work idea should only be applied in an encouraging way. Now, this isn't anything that I've read in the work. It's just something that I've experienced. And it came in one time in a second line group when somebody had shared something very profound and very painful that happened in their life. And the response of one person was, "Did you see how your being attracted your life?" And the taste of that was not good. And I realized the work never says that we're sinners. The work always says that we're just what? We're asleep. So the work would never use an idea like your being attracts your life to throw negative spears at us. So this should always be used in an affirming way. One's being attracts one's life. And again, we have to remember the introductions to the commentaries in the first volume where Maurice Nicol talks about the importance of doing all work with delight. So we can't let this one idea of one's being attract one's life to be an accusing finger pointing. The bearing the unpleasant manifestations of others is another sign of movement, of greater being. To remember to keep your aim is a sign of greater being. Now, there's some things that go along with this too. And that is the idea of bearing the unpleasant manifestations of others is that the work also has a great idea that says, God will never give us more than what we can handle, and we get exactly what we need. So if it's come to us, we use it in that light. It's like, okay, thank you. Thank you, God. Thank you. This is part of my spiritual journey. I'm getting this because I can handle it. I'm tooled to handle it. I've got community, I've got group, I've got work partners, I've got friends at the church, I've got my centering prayer practice, I've got my daily devotions and readings, especially a commentary day that helps to digest these things. And in terms of bearing the unpleasant manifestations of other beings, you realize that through self-observation, non-identification, and self-remembering, that afflictive I that you see in yourself and you realize is not I, you understand it when you see it in another person because you first have seen it in yourself and you've realized it was just a place of sleep. So if it was sleep in me, it certainly is sleep in the other person, because if we were awake, we wouldn't be conducting these eyes in the world. So that great work idea comes in here. If you understood, you wouldn't disagree. Remembering to keep our aim, another sign of greater being. And a change of being means a change of life, which again ties back in to where we started with one's being attracts one's life. And this particular bullet point here is a really good one for us to take a moment and look back at where we started. Notice the changes and influences that you're connected to. Noticing what you used to be connected to and giving your life force to. And how your attention to your spiritual journey, including the work, has changed your life and the influences that are coming into your life. Now, The Fourth Way book by Ospensky is a great book as well. And there's some Q&As in there that are really enjoyable, really helpful to give us a little bit more light on the journey of being. And so the first one to start out with is, to what extent can one develop being without a school? A really good question. And Ospensky responds to his student's question in this way. He says, no real development of being is possible without schools. Or rather, it is possible to a certain extent, but it's generally incomplete. Right development of being is impossible without schools, because one cannot look after oneself. One cannot be sufficiently strict with oneself. And it's not only a question of strict being. One simply cannot remember things at the right time and will forget or will make the things easy for oneself. And if it were possible to work by oneself, schools would be a waste of time and systems would not be necessary. But since they exist, it means that it's impossible without them. One can have no plan, no system by oneself. How can one develop without a plan or a system? How can any work be done? How can one get the necessary knowledge, understand one's position, and know what to do? One cannot get even preliminary knowledge with which to start. A question another student asks is, how do you know of the miraculous results that will follow with these practices with self-remembering? And his answer is, you see, this is connected with the whole idea of development, with the possibility of changing being. This is one of the first things that we must understand, that man is not bound to remain as he is. He can change. And therefore, there's different degrees of man that can be attained after long and persistent work. And if we can become more conscious, we will make higher centers work. So remember that slide a little bit earlier, we saw the higher intellectual center and the higher emotional center, which Father Keating refers to a divine download that's happening through us all the time. And Gurdjieff says the same thing with those higher centers, that they're constantly transmitting, but because we're tuned into denser frequencies, we're not able to get the tuning, our tuning isn't right to receive those higher frequencies. If we become more conscious, we will make the higher centers work. The functioning of these higher centers will be in many ways miraculous. The idea of self-remembering enters into many systems and school teachings, but it's not in the right place. It can never be put first. But this system says that you do not remember yourself, and that if you understand that you do not remember yourself, you may be able to achieve something. Self-awareness is the greatest change possible. And because in ordinary conditions of life, where nobody is aware of himself, people just do not realize this. Everyone sitting here, if they ask themselves sincerely whether they're aware of themselves, they will have to answer that they are not. Nobody is aware. The whole idea is to be aware of yourself in this place, at this moment, and carry this in and throughout your day. This is the beginning, for one has to begin somewhere. Later, it may take different forms. many other things may be included in it. Nothing can describe this. It is material for observation and study. Descriptions will not help. One has to practice. Normally, nobody remembers himself. Nobody is aware of himself. This is the ordinary state of a human being, of a machine, a man machine. But if he knows about it, if he realizes it and thinks about it, it becomes possible. And only in the beginning, self-remembering is very slow in coming and very small, along with long lapses of not remembering. What are the best ways to work on self-knowledge? You remember it said in the beginning that there's two lines by which our development can proceed. The first is the line of knowledge, and this is comprehensible. We must increase our knowledge, for we do not know enough either about ourselves or about the universe. And there again, you can see that Ouspensky is talking about the two components of this work teaching, psychological side and the cosmological side. The second is the line of being, for our being is not what it should be, not only in the sense that we're half-developed beings so that our level can be raised, but also in the sense that certain things in us are underdeveloped, even for our present state. It's said that our chief feature of our being are, for instance, that we're not one, that we are many, that we are not conscious. This is inevitable, but the fact is that we do not realize that it can be changed. We can know it. For example, we can know at every moment, not a single action, not a single thought comes from the whole, but only from a small part of us. We can become aware of this. Change in being, in most cases, begins with our becoming aware of something that we were not aware of before. But being itself can grow and develop, and our level of knowledge can change. And parallel with that knowledge, that growth goes our knowledge. Real work is work on being. And knowledge not only helps, but is essential. Surely, in the case of identification, we are one, not many. Is that perhaps the wrong way to see it? Yes, but it's also one of the many groups of eyes. It is not a whole. And identification practically excludes all other eyes. Even at ordinary moments in your journey, if you're relatively not identified, one eye can be doing something and the other eyes can watch and look in the same direction, at least a certain number of them. But in a state of identification, they are completely shut out. One small eye occupies the whole field. This is the characteristic of our being, that one small eye calls itself I, meaning the whole thing. That is why I say that we always lie to ourselves and to everybody else when we say I, because it is not I, but only a small thing pretending to be the whole. So some final notes on being. A higher level of being is always freer than a lower level of being. A thought does not affect being as emotion does. One must not work against one's being until one has accepted it. And again, there's such a clear complement with what the work is teaching and what Father Thomas was speaking about in the levels of awareness. and rising in the ladder of being necessitates sacrifice. In our case, intentional suffering, sacrificing our common way, our easy way, the way that we have been formed in life. We have just a moment or two if there is a question. Roland, we had you before. If you're still up, we've got a moment to hear what you were ready to share or a question. Yes, Roland, thank you. We can hear you now, Roland.
Hey, are we good?
Yes, we are.
All righty. I don't have a question. I guess what I wanted to share was just a couple of things. I shared with my journey group this week that I had a fear that had been consuming me for a couple of years. And I'd wake up in the middle of the night with it. I'd wake up first thing in the morning with it. And so about 2 months ago, I've been blessed, and my whole life I've been pain-free in my body. But about 2 months ago, I started waking up with pain sensations in my fingers, and eventually went to my hands. And got a little stronger every morning for 2 months. And, you know, it just dawned on me, this is stress induced. Mm. You know, I'm just consumed with this fear. You know, my little eye tells me it's not an irrational fear. It's confirmed every week on the television, something like that. So, you know, I just shared with the group, I'm going to jettison this and just trust that, you know, this is in God's hands. And even if my fear comes to fruition, I'm going to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here trying to recreate the pain, and I can't. You know, just one day, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, is it really that powerful to have a wish, an aim, and to really feel that it's being fulfilled, to live as though it's being fulfilled already, you know, by the grace of God. Yeah. And so even if I wake up with a little bit of pain tomorrow, I'm still going to reaffirm my aim to jettison that fear.
Beautiful.
And as far as my growth in the work, if you were unlucky enough to be in my first two journey groups, I was always the doubting Thomas. Yeah, I was always bringing up, you know, what I saw were inconsistencies and, you know, just questioning a lot of things. And now I'm 5 years into it. I just find myself seeing beauty in more things and in people and just feeling a common connection with everybody that I see and meet. You know, I read that we're in, that people's social circles are shrinking and loneliness is more prevalent today. But when I reach out to a stranger, you know, I often get a 20-minute conversation in a new friendship. Mm. And, you know, I hope my motivation is pure and that it's something close to real I that's communicating and not a manipulative one, taking pride, you know, and making a new friend. I attribute it to, you know, my slow growth in using the tools of the work and seeing the influence on four generations of my family.
Yeah.
Of Tim and Barbara's teachings and the teachings that we've had since he left and retired. So thank you all.
Thank you, Roland. Thank you so much. Marianne?
Thank you, Donald. What a wonderful evening for us to reflect on and to live into. Thank you for your work, for your presence, for your being. Truly, there is a difference in being in individuals. And it's a blessing to be around you and our friends in the work. It makes a difference. So let us join together in praying aloud the prayer of God's love that has been overwhelming for us in this community. God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, as we stay awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.